Hello and welcome to Prostate Cancer Uncensored, a podcast produced by Zero, the end of prostate cancer. I'm Jamie Burse, CEO at Zero. This podcast is about fake news, or rather fake news for prostate cancer. Unfortunately, misinformation about this disease is everywhere. It's on social media, websites, digital ads, brochures, you name it. And someone who knows a thing or two about fake news when it comes to prostate cancer is Dr. Stacy Loeb. Dr. Loeb is a urologist at NYU Langone Health Center in Manhattan, New York. She also hosts the Men's Health Show on Sirius XM US Canada Satellite Radio. Dr. Loeb, we're grateful and honored to have you with us today on Prostate Cancer Uncensored. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're honored to have you. How are you?
Great, great. Good to be here, and what a really important topic.
Definitely. And now, Dr. Loeb, when we were talking the other day, you had mentioned that it's actually your grandfather that got you into the prostate cancer cause and working in the urology field. Is that right?
That is absolutely right. My grandfather and I were very close. He raised me, and he passed away from prostate cancer while I was in medical school. So at that point in time, I decided to dedicate my career towards helping other men and their families who are going through this.
That's terrific that you're helping other families. We have a connection there that my grandfather also passed away from prostate cancer after fighting it for more than a decade. So we have that connection there too. What's your favorite memory of your grandfather?
Oh gosh, I mean, there's so many, but I remember he would always come to my tennis matches after school, and I would go sleep over at my grandparents' house. They were just really wonderful people, and I'll just miss them always.
My favorite memory of my grandfather, I would sit on his lap, and he would always have a peppermint patty for me. So I think that's where I got my chocolate addiction from.
Very nice.
Now, aside from being a urologist and a radio host, Dr. Loeb, you're also a researcher. And the research that I'm interested in hearing most about is prostate cancer and the vast amount of misinformation about it online. Can you tell us about your findings or some of the most recent research that you've worked on around that?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, the internet, I think, is really a double-edged sword for patients, because there's certainly a lot of great information out there, including on social media. It's a great way to keep up on new research findings and connect with doctors and researchers in the field. However, the content really is not vetted, and there's also a lot of false information circulating out there. We started addressing this topic by looking at the first 150 YouTube videos on prostate cancer. What we found is that a significant number of these videos contained biased or misinformative content, either within the video itself or in the comments section underneath.
Now, through the research, Dr. Loeb, what has been the biggest prostate cancer myth that you've seen be repeated over and over and over again?
Well, you know, quite a few things. Some of the information is just outdated. So, for example, prostate cancer screening guidelines have changed. At one time, the United States Preventive Services Task Force recommended against prostate cancer screening. This was later revised to recommend shared decision making about the pros and cons of screening. But there's a lot of videos out there that just say that the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recommends against screening. So one issue with online information is that once something is posted online, it just basically remains up there in perpetuity unless it's actively removed. So you have to be very careful as a health consumer about looking at the date of the information and whether it's a very recent piece of information, because things are just constantly changing in medicine. But then there were other videos that just simply had wrong information. One that comes to mind is a video about injection of herbs into the prostate as a treatment for prostate cancer, which is not evidence-based. This is not a standard treatment that's recommended in the guidelines. However, this video has more than 300,000 views on YouTube. So I find this very concerning, since we have no research indicating that this type of treatment would work. And in fact, injecting herbs into the prostate could even be potentially very dangerous.
I bet you had mentioned the USPSTF around prostate cancer screening. One of my concerns with the information that remains out there over a de-recommendation from the USPSTF, which basically in layman's terms means don't bother, or you don't have to talk to your doctor about prostate cancer screening. One of my concerns is that it's still that old practice, or that old recommendation is something that really continues to stick in the minds of general practitioners when men who are at risk for prostate cancer come in and talk about some of their health concerns that they may or may not should be thinking about. Do you see that as a concern?
Absolutely. Too? I think it's a huge problem. And, you know, the large amount of online content that continues to discuss those old recommendations would only serve to, you know, perpetuate this. So I think this is a really big problem, that as the field changes and the science changes, there's a lot of old stuff that stays on the internet and that kind of remains in the culture of medicine that is really no longer applicable.
Definitely. And this question may be obvious, but you had mentioned that there's not only dated information out there, but just plain and simple wrong information. And we'll get into more of that. And I know you gave me an example around herbal injections into the prostate. So there's a lot of wrong information out there. Why do you think this is so harmful to men?
Well, you know, I think that first of all, if patients and their families see misleading information online, it could change their decisions about their care, or their perceptions about treatment options. You know, and even if patients and their families end up discussing these options with a doctor and still receive the standard treatment, if a large portion of the medical visit is spent discussing things that people saw on the internet that are not evidence-based, then that's that much less time available to discuss the standard treatment options. So my concern is, can it affect decision-making among patients and their families if they see some of these videos with false information and it's really compelling? In the case of the video about the herbal injections, you know, that's a very popular video. So just because something has a lot of views or likes on social media doesn't mean that it's good or that it's accurate. So, you know, but this is a trap that we can fall into. I mean, I myself am subject to this when I'm trying to purchase something on Amazon. I do take into consideration the number of positive reviews that something has received, you know, but the truth is, you know, these could be from bots. These could be from people working for the company that sell the product. There's no way for me to even vet the people who are reviewing the products that I'm looking at on Amazon. And the same kind of thing would apply to these pieces of content about prostate cancer. So I think your safest bet is to go to sources that you know are trustworthy for content about prostate cancer, such as Zero or some of the National Health Organization's governmental groups, where there isn't commercial bias and you know that the information is trustworthy.
Well, great. And you were talking a few minutes ago about herbal injections into the prostate that you had mentioned that had thousands upon thousands of views on YouTube. Being a really well-produced video, it's almost understandable that men might think that that's legitimate, right? And it almost goes to your Amazon example.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, there were some videos by very prominent academic clinicians and researchers in the field that had very few views. But, you know, these videos were not, you know, produced with high production quality. I think it's very difficult, you know, as a clinician and a researcher, I don't have a videography team at my disposal. You know, it would take a lot for me to make a very well-produced video, whereas, you know, commercial entities have a large budget for these types of materials. So if you think about it, you know, many of the videos that don't really have a high production quality, you know, could be coming from some of the people who are real experts in the field. So just because it's a snappy video with good production quality doesn't mean that the information is accurate, and vice versa. You know, if a prominent physician is sitting at their desk and filming something on their iPhone, it may not look very snappy, but they may be sharing, you know, really important information.
Definitely. And the web is really the first place that many men go, really anybody goes to when they hear about, you know, if they've got a health problem. So men, when they hear the words, you know, prostate cancer, or you've got prostate cancer, uttered by their doctor, you know, one of the first places they go is the web. So with all that fake news, not only is it just harmful to them, but it can really be a waste of your time too, right?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think it's a big waste of time.
Well, for yours too, you had mentioned that you're putting together a bigger and bigger team all the time to go through some of these videos and misinformation that I'm sure that you personally get caught in into doing it a lot too, no?
Right. Absolutely. So, you know, I mean, I think it's a common occurrence that patients come to the office and, you know, they've seen something online and they want to talk about it. And really, you know, it has no relevance to their case, you know, and it concerns me that we're spending precious minutes in the short encounter talking and dispelling myths. So, but, you know, we are working on this, as you mentioned, in the research setting. We have developed a larger team of physicians and researchers who want to address this issue. So we're looking into new possibilities. For example, could there be a computer science approach to this where we use machine learning to help us identify potentially misinformative content about prostate cancer? We've been working on this. We just published a preliminary conference paper about this for a multimodal modeling conference. And, you know, basically with our preliminary algorithm, we have about 74% accuracy of the model to identify misinformative videos about prostate cancer. So we're excited about this and we'll see where this research goes.
And you had mentioned when we were talking the other day that there's a lot of work ahead of you because out of, give me a ballpark figure, out of 10 pieces of prostate cancer information that you would find online, what's the percentage of it that's misinformation or just not true?
Well, in the sample that we looked at on YouTube, 77% of the top 150 videos had something that was potentially biased or misinformative within the video or the comments. So, you know, it depends if you watch the whole video, if you read the comments underneath, but, you know, we did see some surprising things. You know, believe it or not, patients and their families are asking each other for medical advice in the comments section on YouTube and giving and receiving advice. So there were people asking, you know, what treatment should my dad have for his prostate cancer? And another user writes back. So, you know, bottom line, I think it's very important for, you know, let the buyer beware and for health consumers to be very discerning about where they're going for their information.
That's astounding. Almost 4 out of 5 pieces of information about prostate cancer on the web may be biased or have some sort of misinformation in them that prostate cancer patients and their caregivers should be aware of. That's astounding. But let's give our listeners some advice, Dr. Loeb. We can't stop men from going online. So when they do, how can they make sure that the info that they're getting is good or reliable?
Well, I have a few pointers. Number one, as I mentioned, the date of the information is very important. There's new drugs that are approved, guidelines change, new research studies come out that change the sequence of prostate cancer treatments. So this is a constantly dynamic field, which is great news. But you know, the downside is that information can quickly become dated. So looking at the date of any content that you're reviewing is very important. Another piece of advice I would say is to ask your doctor where to look for information. I think that we can all agree, both patients and physicians, that the clinical encounter is too short, and it's natural that patients and their families are going to need more in-depth information. And that can be a prospective discussion between patients and their physician. What websites do you recommend? Do you have any videos, any books, other resources? So rather than trying to track things down on your own, getting some suggested resources directly from your physician or from a trusted organization like Xero. And then, you know, another piece of advice is just to talk about things that you see online with your doctor. You know, if something is pressing on your mind that you reviewed, or if there's something that's so compelling that it makes you want to change what you do, or even not do the treatment that was originally discussed with the doctor, I think it's really important to just be upfront with that. There's been a lot of research about the impact of the internet on patient-physician communication. And, you know, it's a really mixed bag, but it can be a real supplement to patient-physician communication. A patient who is really well-informed and has read a lot about their options, that really presents new opportunities for the patient-physician discussion. So just making sure to let the doctor in on any doubts or concerns that you may have or that have been raised as a result of what you read online, so that, you know, they can either be, they could be talked through.
Now, Dr. Loeb, I believe you split your time between doing research and also on the clinical side, seeing patients. Is that right?
Roughly? Yes. Yes, that's right. I have 3 clinical days and 2 research days. I really enjoy having both components as part of my job because I see it as the circle of life. Some of my best research ideas have been inspired by questions that patients ask me in clinic. For example, my first NIH grant looked at comparing different strategies for active surveillance of prostate cancer. What happens over a lifetime if you were to have a biopsy every year versus every 5 years, or perhaps do MRI instead of biopsy? And there really aren't any randomized trials comparing these different approaches, but patients were asking me, do I really have to have another biopsy this year? You know, and it just, we didn't know the answer. So I made a grant proposal to create a mathematical model that would compare the outcomes of these different protocols over a lifetime horizon. And it felt very validating to then go back to the clinic and tell these patients the results of the research that we did and what we found and what I would then say about their case. So I see the clinical and research side as really being an ideal marriage, and it's just, there's nothing better than, you know, using patients' questions to inspire what really are the most important topics to look at in research, and then to go back to patients with the results.
Yeah, it must be amazingly empowering to, like you just said, you know, hear some of the questions that you're getting from your patients on the clinical side, and then to go back and over time be able to find the answers that they're searching for, and be able to deliver on that.
Yes,
that's wonderful. And putting on my patient advocacy hat, and we're talking about misinformation around prostate cancer and where to go to really get the most accurate information. Are there websites that come to mind? You know, maybe two or three websites that come to mind that you trust almost implicitly that you send your patients to?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think right here we're talking about it. You can go to zerocancer.org. I think that's definitely a great website. I just finished my term as chair of the Technology and Publications Committee for the Urology Care Foundation. And there's a lot of good resources available on their website. They also have a print magazine and sometimes sponsor some tweet chats about prostate cancer. I've also been working with the Prostate Cancer Foundation on some digital content for patients. I helped with the patient guide that they come out with that discusses different treatment options. And I also work with them to host a once per month Prostate Cancer Journal Club on Twitter. So anyone who's interested can certainly participate in that. It's open to anyone, and it's indexed on Twitter using the hashtag ProstateJC, which stands for Prostate Journal Club. So we discuss one new article per month on there, and a lot of different clinicians and scientists in the field participate in that. So those are a few sources that come to mind.
Yeah, it's interesting you bringing up the Prostate Journal Club and having that Twitter discussion happen every month. I remember going through and studying for my MPA and hearing one of the professors talk about, you know, if you're working on a research project, one of the most helpful tools out there is actually Twitter to communicate among your fellow researchers to get discussion going around some of the projects that are being worked on. So would you say that that's a plus? You know, there are places on social media like Twitter or Facebook or whatever that can help spread misinformation, but then you also have it on the flip side that it's been able to, would you say it's been able to speed connection among researchers or help collaboration in that way?
No question. You know, I think there definitely is a very positive side to social media. Zero is very involved in social media, and I think it is an important way for patients to get information and support as they go through the process. Some of these things that I mentioned, like the Prostate Cancer Journal Club on Twitter, I think it's really a neat concept. You know, we have a journal club once a month for NYU Urology. You know, my department meets in one room in the hospital and we discuss six new journal articles that came out, but that is only within our hospital. So, you know, the traditional journal club concept, although it's nice to keep up to date on research, it's a bit insular. That it's geographically limited and it's not open to the public. So these Twitter-based journal clubs is a nice way for discussions about new research to happen among a multidisciplinary group of doctors and scientists from all around the world, and which is open to the public, and therefore patients, caregivers, and other stakeholders can also participate in these discussions. So I think, you know, in a way, social media is a great equalizer. It levels the playing field where everyone is can view the same information at the same time. Connections. I myself have become connected with many other professionals working on prostate cancer from around the world through Twitter, and with many patient advocates who actively participate in these discussions. So I think it's really been fantastic. So I wouldn't want to give an overly negative viewpoint of social media. I guess you could say there's a lot of promise and a lot of peril, which is why it's just important to be very selective about where you're looking for information.
Now, as a member of the public or the general public, what would you say that we could be doing better as a society to spread the correct information around prostate cancer or health issues? What are we not doing that we should be doing?
Well, I think Zero is already leading the charge. You know, I think if there are websites where there's a catalog of resources where people can look for information, that's a good start. Certainly, if you see anything that's misleading or false, you know, reporting that content would be a good start, so that hopefully we can start to get some of these things taken off the internet. you know, and creation of more content that is good. You know, let's try to drown out the misinformation. You know, they say the solution to pollution is dilution. So, you know, as a healthcare professional, I think that part of our mission is to get involved in the public discourse. That's why I participate in social media actively and why I host the radio show on Sirius XM. I see it as part of my duty to help raise the signal above the noise and provide good quality information to the general public. So I would encourage other healthcare professionals and scientists to actively participate in these public networks and help to set the record straight.
And I was just going to say that that's definitely someplace that men who are diagnosed with prostate cancer or their caregivers or families should go is you have quite a following on social media, on Twitter. I believe your Twitter handle is at Loeb Stacy. It's LOEBSTACY. And Dr. Loeb has almost 13,000 followers on Twitter. I know that doesn't necessarily validate that what she's saying is true, but what you, everything that you are saying is factual and true, and you're dedicating your career toward breaking down that misinformation and putting out there the correct information so men can make the best informed decisions around their prostate health. So that's definitely some place to go is to follow Stacy on Twitter. And certainly listen to your show on Sirius XM. What channel is that on?
So the show is on Sirius XM channel 110. It's the Men's Health Show. It's live on Wednesdays from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, and there are repeats throughout the week. If you miss the show, it's also available for subscribers in the on-demand section of the Sirius XM website. One bonus of listening to the show live is that we do take questions from callers. So if you are a patient or a family member and have a question about prostate cancer, we get a lot of great experts on the show. I interview all kinds of different people about different prostate cancer topics, and you're always welcome to call in and ask us a question.
Now, what's a topic that you keep going back to over and over again, Dr. Loeb?
Well, you know, really all different aspects of prostate cancer. Our next show is on prostate cancer genetics and about BRCA in men. Certainly a lot of people have heard of BRCA in relation to breast cancer and Angelina Jolie, but there seems to be a lot less awareness among the public about the relationship between BRCA and an increased risk of prostate cancer. So that is the topic of this week's show. We're also going to be doing a lot more on diet and nutrition and prostate cancer on upcoming shows and about prostate cancer treatment. On my last show, we discussed some of the newer approaches to radiation therapy for prostate cancer and some of these shorter course radiation therapy options, you know, and as new research comes out, we try to just invite on the people who write the studies to hopefully, you know, give the public the first glance at research that comes out.
Well, it sounds like we're aligned on much of this. I just did recently did a Zero Live on Facebook with a doctor talking about BRCA mutations around prostate cancer and how important it is to continue to get somatic and germline testing around BRCA2 genes to see, you know, how your body changes over time and how that dictates your risk of having aggressive disease. Definitely an important topic.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think this is really a hot area now is prostate cancer genetics, huge topic of research. And I think this is going to be extremely important moving forward. Already, you know, there's some targeted therapy options for prostate cancer for patients who have specific genetic mutations. And I think this is, we're just at the tip of the iceberg. This is just going to keep advancing over the next few years, you know. So as I see it, you know, in a decade from now, probably everything will be genetically determined. I suspect that all men will undergo germline testing at a young age. This will help determine their risk of developing prostate cancer in their lifetime. Hopefully there will even be targeted prevention approaches where, depending on your genetic makeup, probably certain prevention strategies might work for you better than it would for other people. You know, and then treatment, you know, probably treatment of the future is going to be based on genetic pathways and targeting the specific mutations in each case. So we're not totally there yet. We're only at the beginning, but I think it's really an exciting time of moving forward into precision medicine. And I encourage all of the listeners to stay tuned on that topic.
Definitely. I couldn't have said it better myself. That's going to help us get us to generation zero, the first generation of men free from prostate cancer, to be able to not only to detect the disease early, but be able to determine what's aggressive disease and what's a benign tumor that you can live with. Dr. Loeb, thank you for sharing your story with us and helping us navigate the sea of misinformation out there about prostate cancer. As you said, for our listeners, a place you can always trust for information is zerocancer.org, but then also following Dr. Loeb on Twitter. It's at Loeb, that's L-O-E-B, Stacy, S-T-A-C-Y. Again, that's on Twitter, or tune in to her show on Sirius XM, channel 110, the Men's Health Show. You can always trust those two places for getting accurate information around prostate cancer. Dr. Loeb, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And once again, I'm your host, Jamie Burse. And thank you to each and every one of our listeners to tuning in to Prostate Cancer Uncensored.